Good afternoon, human beings, folks, fellow travelers of this existential dread, as we meander our way on September the 10th, 2019. Can you hear the ram-tam-tattle of those monsters of regret? Can you hear the chains of clinky clink as they go down the street looking for the next victim? Can you hear the tribes of scrumbly folk? Do you sense the coming anguish of the great unleashing? Yeah, it's September the 10th, 2019, folks. And indeed, everything's great, everything's fine here in Little Saigon. We got lots of interesting topics to talk about, not least of which is the announcement by Bibi Netanyahu that he promises to, what did he say? To annex, essentially, all of the Palestinian lands, to annex the West Bank and Gaza if he is elected. Now, of course, that would be a war crime. Of course, that's assuming that anyone gives a fuck. I mean, it's kind of funny, this fucking Jojo Rabbit movie coming out and Bibi and the Israelis wanting to take out Iran and possibly wipe out the Palestinians that are left. It seems to me that every time the Israelis want to do something that's kind of like what Hitler would do, they have to have a movie coming out that reminds us of all the terrible things that happened to Jewish people during World War II, which is horrible. I'm not a Holocaust denier. I mean, I guess you could say that's a lie, if it is a lie. I don't think it's a lie. It can't be a lie. But if the Holocaust were a lie, it's one of the last ones I have to hold on to, because reality would be too much of a monkey fuck if it were really just completely made up. So I believe it. I believe that the Nazis were terrible. I believe, as someone who studied history, a bit of history, that the evidence is in. So yeah, I believe it. But it does seem like every time the Israelis want to do something terrible, on par with what Hitler would do, like taking other people's land or waging illegal wars or murdering men, women, and children, It seems like you have to have a movie out of Hollywood. You have to have some kind of movie, Schindler's List, The Pianist, or whatever. And now it's Jojo Rabbit. And so we can watch the Disney Jojo Rabbit movie and feel really terrible about feeling, you know, whatever. Fuck. I think Americans are completely, have been fooled. You know, if you are opposed to the policies of Israel, this does not make you anti-Semitic. This does not make you a hate monger. If you are opposed to the state of Israel, it does not make you anti-Jewish. In fact, based upon some genetic studies that have been done in the last couple decades, it's a big question mark if a lot of the folks who think, you know, who are Israeli citizens are actually Jewish at all. So there's that topic too, and I mean this in terms of ethnicity. With respect to their religion, I have no idea if the average Israeli worships Yahweh, worships our Lord in heaven, the same way that an ancient Israeli would have, you know, several fucking thousand years ago. But it's been a minute. And if Israel was given to Jacob, if Jacob became Israel, if the grant of these lands were given to all the tribes that leaved Egypt, then that grant was given thousands of years ago, and the Israelis turned their back on God. The Israelis, the original Israelis, the original Hebrews, the chosen people, turned their back on God multiple times, and they lost that grant. That grant was given, and that grant was taken away. And while it might be true that there are references to Israel and the rebirth of Israel in prophecy, it's not what you think it is, folks. I don't think it's, you know, Israel as some good country coming along as part of prophecy. It's more like if you see Israel, then you're pretty certain Lucifer's on his way. Yeah. So anyways, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but it just kind of pisses me off that a lot of Americans just tend to just have this knee-jerk support for Israel. And I think we need to get over that shit. Israel, whatever Israel is, it's a country. And if we supposedly give a shit about international law, which I know we don't, then we should hold Israel to the same standards that we hold everyone else to. Israel has atomic weapons. Israel has fission and fusion devices. Why don't we ask the Israelis to get rid of their nukes? Oh, they've been to war a couple times in the last fucking 50, 60 years. I mean, basically, Israel is a sliver of a country, and they have the hydrogen bomb. They have bombs so big that if they were to set off just a couple, they would wipe out their own country. Their entire country would disappear. Of course, that's not greater Israel, and greater Israel is the plan, right? It's the plan, Stan. It's to restore to Israel Jordan and Gaza, the West Bank, the Sinai, all of it, and as much of Iraq as Iraq is willing to give up. So no, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I gotta tell you, folks, I'm getting really bad heebie-jeebies about this shit. I don't know what to tell you. Oh, fuck. Shit, I know who this is. Fuck, I know who this is. Ugh.
Hey.
Oh my god, I know who this is.
Hey, Daniel.
Oh my god. You see, I got this new alarm built when Glimbus comes by. I don't know.
Fuck you, Polo. Fuck you.
Fuck you too, Glimbus. You called. What do you want?
This is Glimbus 12. Oh. I'm the most advanced cybernetic French bulldog hybrid ever, man. Oh. What are you? You old miserable fuck.
You're the fuck.
We was Kangs.
Yeah, I know you were Kangs.
We was Kangs, man.
I know you were Kangs.
Anywho, we got your tests back from Dr. Grunkis.
Oh,
it's
good.
It's not good.
It's not, that's great. I went to see Dr. Grunkis during office hours last Thursday.
You must have your entire digestive tract removed.
Fuck. Fuck that bullshit.
All the insides need to go.
Oh.
Dr. Brunkies will replace it all with sawdust, broken glass, regret, sadness, and asbestos.
Oh, that's great, you fuck.
Talk to you later, Polo.
Talk to you later,
bye.
Too. God dang it. Yeah, so I went to see Dr. Grunkis last week, and now here's Glimbus 12 telling me that he met with Grunkis, and I have to have what's called a insideotomy. When your insides are no longer functional and you're feeling sick all the time, Dr. Grunkis thinks there's something wrong with you. And when he thinks there's something wrong with you, you gotta do something about it. The only solution for Dr. Grunkis is a radical procedure that involves removing all of your insides and replacing it with sawdust and sand, broken glass and gasoline, regret and sadness and asbestos and whatever riprap and garbage he finds lying on the ground in the alleyway. And where your heart once was, he takes a beer bottle and he fills it with his own urine and he sticks it into your chest cavity and then he sews it up with 50-pound test fishing line. Yeah, so Dr. Grunkis recommends that because of my stomach issues recently, I have to have it all removed. And that's not great, folks. That's not great. It's not great that... It's really not that great that Bibi Netanyahu feels comfortable saying, if you vote for me, I will steal other people's land. It's not the question of the action itself. It's how out and open it is. It's bullshit. That Israeli shit is bullshit. And it's also not great that I have to undergo Dr. Grunkus's inside-otomy, or the insides out of me. But I don't know what good they were doing anyways. What were they doing in there anyways? Processing the food I eat? I don't eat good food no more. Yeah, so that's not good. It's not good. First topic, crypto. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on crypto because I have been known to, I don't want to say beat up on crypto. I was skeptical back in 2010, 2011, around about those years when Bitcoin first came along and the whole Satoshi mythology. And I call it a mythology because that's what it seems like at this point. Like, it doesn't really seem like technology. It's about as bad as this Q. You know, this QAnon that all these Trump fucks listen to get their secret messages. In a lot of ways, the crypto stuff is like that. It's a cargo cult messaging. It doesn't seem quite legit. And I will say this. No matter what the real source of Satoshi and Bitcoin and all the other cryptos really are, whatever the real source of the blockchain is, and it might very well be some super advanced, highly skilled black ops computer scientist named Satoshi, though that seems highly unlikely. What the crypto thing did in the last decade is it more or less shifted focus from precious metals, and believe me, the banks love that. It shifted focus from precious metals, which after the 2008 great financial crisis, in the years that followed, silver and gold tested some pretty good highs. Silver, you know, got into the area of almost $50 an ounce for a while, and it was almost going to be stable there. And gold was over 2,000 an ounce. I think it got up to around 2,400 an ounce. And then the magical cryptos came along, all magical, out of the sideways direction. And people told me back then, Dan, you don't get it. The blockchain is like the internet in 1994. Listen, you stupid fuck, I am a computer scientist and you don't get it. The internet actually worked in 1994. It wasn't non-deterministic. There wasn't any coin clipping on the HTML. Maybe you didn't have all the multimedia you have today, but for what it did, it worked. Okay? Your cryptos still don't fucking work. And you constantly tell people how easy it is to get into the crypto world, but the more I get into it, the sleazier it looks. You go to local Bitcoins, you say, I want to buy some Bitcoin. And basically it comes down to, oh, can we see a fucking picture of your passport? Oh, we have to do know your customer. Here's the thing, folks. The fact that crypto people, the so-called peer-to-peer anti-bank people, are implementing KYC, know your customer, that's not just about obeying the laws of the crocodile. Of course you're obeying the laws of the crocodile, which means by definition, you're not opposed to the crocodile, you stupid blockchain fuck. But if I have to go to local Bitcoins and scan you a copy of my license or my passport or give you any personal information at all, other than just using a fucking credit card number, then it seems to me that this is bullshit. This is total bullshit. But like I said, it's almost been a Keynesian works program. I mean, it has gotten a lot of people to spend a lot of money on computing and computers that are, in my opinion, simply doing nothing of any importance. For all the coin generation that's occurred in the last 10 years, nothing relevant to the survival of you as a human being has been accomplished by this. Nothing. And arguably, it might have been a major setback. It might have actually done more damage to ecosystems, to water supplies, and to your fucking free will than anything else. That's how I feel about the crypto shit. It seems like a giant Keynesian make-work program perfectly designed to keep precious metal prices suppressed. And yeah, eventually, if it does work, eventually, if it's functional in a way that I feel comfortable using it and it's actually private, which will never happen, okay. But eventually, if it kind of works in a way that most of the schlumps and the robots like things to work these days, which means they don't want to think too much as long as they get their Schlumbus cube, then yeah, as long as Bitcoin works to the point that you can go to your fucking Taco Time or McDoggle Hell or whatever fast food gumulus site you go to and get your cheese whiz, as long as it works that way, people won't ask too many questions. But when it starts working like that, the central banks will control it. I was at a fucking conference where there were tons of fucking crypto barons, and they all had the same subject. This was like a year ago. They all talked about the same thing, okay? Technically a couple years ago. And the main topic was, whose crypto is going to get picked? Will it be Ether? Will it be Bitcoin? Who will be picked? What they meant was, is who will be chosen by the central banks to be the crypto? Yeah, folks, this is total bullshit. If you are an anarchist and you have invested your time in blockchain bullshit, you have been suckered. You have been suckered. You have voluntarily engaged in a massive scheme. And your financial records are now like carbonite put into the blockchain forever. It doesn't go away. And you can tell me all your bullshit about, well, it's just my public wallet key. Dude, I've been working in data mining. I've been working with people's, basically PII and identifying demographic information for more than a decade. I will tell you straight up, once your public key goes on that blockchain, every fucking algorithm that can get access to that blockchain, which is everyone because it's not restricted, and that includes the IRS folks, you stupid fucks, they're going to know who you are. You're going to get a letter from the crocodile. Oh, no one told you that it really wasn't peer-to-peer, did they? They didn't really tell you it wasn't really private. In fact, it's the opposite of private. And as far as being decentralized, it's polycentric. Although, frankly, most of these idiots that run miners don't understand computer science, let alone topology. Yeah, I don't want to beat up on that too much, but folks, the crypto shit, as time goes on, looks more and more like a steaming pile of crap. And I don't know how to say it any nicer than that. That is the nicest way I can put it. Okay? That is... I wish I could say something nicer, maybe. Okay, next topic. Well, in the past, we have discussed the subject of, French bulldogs, the life cycle of French bulldogs, where they come from. But the one thing we haven't talked about much is, oh, fuck, Beans, what the fuck? Beans. Oh, fuck you. Okay, Beans. No. I'm not dealing with your bullshit. No. 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 Enough of that. Beans was trying to phone in. He was asking me what I'm doing this next weekend. It's none of his fucking business. But on the topic of beans and French bulldogs, the subject has come up. What happens when they die? Because we all know how French bulldogs come to exist. But do we know for certain what happens when a French bulldog dies? Thank you. Do we know what happens when the tiny little French bulldog that you love so much, maybe he's called Charlie Cakes? Maybe you call your little friend Glitzy. Maybe it's Mitzi. But where does it go when it dies? Where does it travel to? How does it find respite in the afterlife? And it's one of those questions that boggles the mind. Where does the French bulldog go? You know, does it evaporate? Does it turn into a puff of smoke and the wind just blows it away? I mean, these are things that most people don't think about because most people are just too afraid. Their hearts shiver at the thought of that French bulldog that they love so much, but they also fear it. They love their little French bulldog, but it's got diabetes. Little Gumpus has been alive for 12 years. That's a long time for a French bulldog. Gumpus is surrounded by his family, his parent owners, and their daughter, and they're so sad. Gumpus is going away. Mommy, where's Gumpus gonna go when he dies? What do you mean? What do you mean, Mom? Dad? Is Mom serious? Is that where Gumpus is gonna go? Oh, come on, Dad. Tell me the truth. Poor little Gumpus. Passed in his sleep. And as they were observing Gumpus, they noted something rather strange. Mommy, what's happening to Gumpus? What do you mean? Mommy, what's happening to Gumpus? Gumpus, he seems to be transmogrifying. Hurry, daughter, hurry. Hurry, honey. Yes, honey, go get the bucket. Fill it with water and some salt. We have to put Gumpus in the bucket. Okay, I've got the bucket here. Let's get him in there. I've got the car out front. Mommy, Daddy, what are we doing? We have to help Gumpus. We have to help him reach the next stage. The family drove quickly on that road somewhere near Burien, Washington, not far from that place people go to get brunch. What the fuck is it called? They drive their fashionable electric vehicle to Redondo Beach, not far from their home. And Gumpus is in the bucket, but he's continually changing. The daughter's afraid. There's a green, musky, slimy fog encompassing the car. The father is coughing as he drives. And the family makes it. They make it to Redondo Beach, and the father carries the bucket down to the beach, and it's late at night. It's a dark night, a dark, dark, ugly, horrible night. It is loudly quiet. The father looks at the wife and says, "We knew this would happen one day. We knew we would be paying the price one day." We would have to participate in this terrible ritual. The father takes the bucket with their formerly French bulldog named Gumpus and pours it out onto the beach. A bulbous mass of glumulating glumbulus is wriggling away. It's dark out. They can't tell what it is. It's not a dog any longer. It's something, and it ain't not should have be here at all. It shouldn't be here. Mommy, Daddy, that ain't nothing that looks like nothing that should be here. And in the darkness, they heard a familiar noise, a whispering, wispy noise out of the glunkus. They heard it. It was, "Ho-oh, ho-oh." And the mucous membrane encompassing the former gumpus opens up, and out of it comes something quite terrible. "Honey, what the fuck is that?" "I don't know." "Daddy? What is that?" "I said I don't know." "Is that a crab?" "I don't know. It looks like a crab. It looks like a hermit crab. It looks a little bit like a hermit crab and a raccoon." "Is that Gumpus?" And as the father said those words, the small racco crab or hermat, whatever you want to call it, looked up at him with eyes watered over. Could be because of the glands in the animal's eyes, could be because of a sadness, an ancient sadness of knowing that Gumpus would never see his owners again. And Gumpus looks at the family on that beach late at night, the waves lightly wafting up to the shore, a sense of some destiny, and in the distance they hear the ancient screams. Screams so ugly, screams so vicious and impossible, they're not sure what to say. And with the scream of the overlord of all the raccoon crab bulldogs. In the distance, the overlord yells, "Blajingus!" And the young Gumpus turns towards the sea. Gumpus rushes towards the sea. He has 8 legs now, 8 crabby legs. He still has his same hermit crab face, as all French bulldogs do. Yep, the hermit crab face is a dead giveaway of where those things go and where they come from. And Gumpus rushes into the water. He swims out towards a mob of other crab, raccoon, hermit, French bulldogs like him. French bullcrap, if you ask me. And they could hear him and the others in the distance as they went away. "Howl! Howl, howl, gobble, gobble! Hobble, gobble, gobble!" And the family says goodbye. A French bulldog that came into existence crawling out of the earth 12 years ago on Halloween night disappears into the Puget Sound. These creatures don't do that well, but they make it. Many of them, as they come to exist, get eaten by orcas, but yeah, orcas don't like them too much because they vomit them up. So now you know the true story of where French bulldogs go when they die. And I have to say that if that's the only thing you get out of this podcast, the true story, now you know the complete arc of life. But you really don't, because we haven't talked about what happens after they, go to the sea, because there's still a story to be told there. a complete mystery of the total life cycle of the French bulldog, but we have discussed its pupa stage, whereby it's this cuddly little fucknut that you feed food so it poops and vomits and eats its poo and eats its vomit. Yeah. Next topic. What do you say? What do you say, Vern? What do you say, Vern? You know, or V-E-R-N. Ugh. Connectome. I don't know if you've seen discussions of the Connectome bullshit in the media. Ugh. Yeah, connectomes, that we are all connectomes, that you are a connectome. And it's just a fancy way of saying that you are the mathematical representation of the topological state of all your connections in your brain. Now, I don't want to talk about the fucknut, you know, Gumbus King professor that proposed this revolutionary idea. It's not that revolutionary. In fact, it's a lot of, in some ways, it's a lot of rehashed bullshit. But what it does do when people talk about connectomes, when they say, oh, you're just a connectome, what they're really doing is dehumanizing. You see, here's the thing about Obama's big brain mapping project and all the fucking functional MRI crapola. What they want to convince you is there's nothing particularly special about your brain. It's just a chunk of fat and water, some salt, a few minerals, and that's it. Throw in some glucose. Throw in some oxygen. And you're cooking with gas. And that's what you are. You're nothing more than the connections of all your neurons. That is who you are, blah, blah, blah. And if they can convince you of that, if they can make you believe that's who you are, then I promise you, they can do almost anything to you. I used to believe on a certain level. It's kind of like, you know how at the beginning of this podcast, I talked about lies, and I said this, it was like a Freudian slip. That's a double Freudian slip. I mentioned the word lie with respect to the Holocaust. I'm not a Holocaust denier. So I don't believe it's a lie. But what I will say is this. It is hard to give up certain beliefs because they are so intrinsic to our paradigm. It is hard to believe or accept certain truths that contradict our paradigm. For example, it is really hard to believe that our government orchestrated 9/11. But I gotta be honest with you. The evidence looks like that. Okay? The entire thing was a sham. But it's hard to believe. It's so hard to believe, people will not believe it. You can tell them all the live long day it was bullshit. It was an excuse for a massive invasion of the Middle East and the Persian Gulf. It was an excuse to take out countries. It was an excuse to force people to use the petrodollar. That's all it was. It was a giant steaming pile of shit. And whatever its full agenda is, you'll never know. That's how much they respect you. That's how much they give a fuck about you, the voter. You will never know. So when they call you a connectome, when they reduce your existence, your mind, your soul, your brain, to just some system of connections, and oh, by the way, because of Obama's massive grant, we can now map it all, which is probably bullshit, and we can stick you in a computer, and then you don't need a body no more. And without your body, you don't need to eat anything, you know, you don't need to drink any clean water. We can fuck and hose the entire planet into a giant silicon garbage factory and put you all in machines and it won't matter because nothing matters. You see, that's the underlying message of things like the Connectome. You'll listen to some dude on TED Talks and you'll say, oh, this sounds so cool, so futuristic. They'll stick my mind in a computer. No, dude, they're going to kill you. They will kill you, and then they'll take whatever data they can extract from your brain and put that in a computer. And that's not going to be you. Even if it talks like you, looks like you, has all the little quirks you have, has that little silly story you always bring up. It won't be you. No amount of claiming it's you. It won't be you. And in reality, I think it's going to be pretty easy for people to figure out. So no, I think that, you know, I know it's a random topic, but sometimes I think they want to trick a lot of people into the whole upload your consciousness thing just as another means of killing a lot of people, because that's what they're going to do. They will kill you, and then they'll claim that now you're in the machine, and your family and your friends will have a conversation with this simulacrum of you, and they'll think it's you, but it won't be you. You will be dead. You will have been murdered. That's reality. Yeah. So I don't know. I think I beat that one. Kinect Dome was a weird topic because I saw this weird TED Talks dude talking about it, and I thought, this sounds like a kind of pseudoscientific bullshit. It's sort of true, and it's sort of a kind of bullshit anyways. Next topic. The Bible is not a linear book. Now, one of the many things, or one of the many pitfalls I think people run into with the Holy Bible, not the least of which is people don't know its history. You should really research the Bible's history before you start reading it. You should research the Council of Nicaea. You should research why some books were included and why some books were excluded. And I'm not entirely convinced that that was a reasonable 100% about God process. I'm fairly convinced it was about power. Now, does that mean the Bible is a lie? No. But I'll also tell you, the Bible probably is missing a couple books. Now, the good news is, these books called the Apocrypha are out there. They're available. I'm going off on this topic because a lot of people will poo-poo the Bible, make fun of Christians, but they've never really read the Bible, and they really don't even remotely want to try. So it's sort of like making fun of Nietzsche, but you've never actually read any Nietzsche. It's like, oh, Nietzsche's so stupid. Yeah, really? Why is he stupid? Oh, because he said that it was okay for Hitler to kill the Jews. And it's like, holy fuck, dude, you're a fucking moron. Did you know that Nietzsche and Wagner were friends up until Nietzsche realized Wagner was an anti-Semitic piece of shit? Yeah. The story of Nietzsche's anti-Semitism is related to his sister, who managed his estate, Nietzsche's estate, after he died. Now, I won't go into all the specifics of this, but my point is really quite simple. If you're one of these motherfuckers who makes fun of the Bible, but never reads it, or has never tried to read it, or got some cartoon version of it from some half-ass idiot who is drunk, and thereby are judging Christianity and Christians because of it, then I think, and again, Jesus wants me to say it this way, I think you need to meditate. I think you need to crack that book open, because there's a lot in there. But one thing I would add for this topic, and this is the you could say the core portion of this topic, is that the Bible is not a linear book. A lot of books are linear. A lot of books are designed that you start at the beginning and you read it to the end. But some books aren't. And some books aren't, and I'm not even sure their authors were aware of it. Like, for example, and again, I'm going back to Nietzsche. Nietzsche wrote a lot of stuff. Some of his stuff is kind of linear. But frankly, some of his stuff is not linear. Some of it is the kind of stuff where you're almost better off reading it from the end to the beginning. Now, I'm not saying that that's how you should read Nietzsche, but my point is, not all books are linear. Not all books are set out chapter A through chapter Z. And often books, some books, will weave stories, weave ideas in a sort of, I don't want to say asynchronic, but sort of a countertemporal way, which means that in terms of the arrow of time, you're reading going forward, so to speak. You know, that's the information theory arrow of time. In terms of the arrow of time, it's like the arrow goes the other direction. And I don't want to get into like all the matrix analysis of the Bible where people, you know, the Bible code, that's a whole nother subject. I have no dog in the Bible code hunt. That is not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about decrypting the Bible. I'm talking about the fact that, yes, you can read the Bible going forward, and that's perfectly fine, but you can also read sections of it and then go back and forth. You can kind of treat it as a sort of journey too, in which you're not on a straight line, and that's okay. I'm not literally saying read the Bible backwards, okay? I'm not saying read the words backwards. In fact, that sounds kind of satanic to me. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if you happen to open the Bible, let's say, to Isaiah, and it says something of interest to you, and then you research it and you say, holy crap, this same thing comes up in Revelation, so you flip to Revelations. That's okay. I actually think that's one of the ways in which you're supposed to read the Bible. You're also supposed to read it from A to Z. Yes, it's true. You need to read it in a linear way. The other thing about the Bible, in terms of its non-linearity, is it's not just a history book. Yes, there is history in the Bible, but there's also a lot of philosophy. It's maybe not philosophy you agree with, but there are entire books of the Bible, you know, and many of them are called the wisdom books, like Proverbs, like Psalms, that are more about philosophy, more about what we believe as Christians, as followers of God. And that, too, is not necessarily linear. It's not necessarily laid out in a, oh, I read this word and then this word, and then I go to the next sentence and I'm saved. I'm not entirely sure it's that simple. But, like I said, you can just read the Bible any way you want to. And, in truth, you're having a conversation with God, and that's your business. And the actual meaning is still something between you and God. So even what I'm saying right now, if you wanted to say, ah, that's just you, Dan, guess what? That's okay, too. Anyways, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this one, but I was in church last week, and it occurred to me that the Bible was not a linear book. Oh, next topic, perhaps the last one for this one. Maybe not the last one. So, I've had a rather, and I brought this up in my podcast before, I've had a rather dim view of reality probably since I was a kid. And when I say reality, I don't mean the universe that God created. I don't mean the universe that God created. I don't mean the planet Earth. That's not what I mean. But I've had a dim view of the reality that's given to us by the secular world, okay? It's like, you know, when I was a kid, and this is how the world worked, this was before the internet, folks, you'd turn on the 6 o'clock news, and some man or woman or both would tell you what's going on. And you would read a newspaper, and some reporter would tell you what's going on. And the assumption was you were being told the truth. But even as a kid, I suspected that I wasn't being told the truth. I didn't know what the truth was, but it did seem like something was wrong. The other thing, too, is that I was a kid in the 70s, okay? Like, I was born in 1970, I turned 10 in 1980. That's me. I was a kid in the 70s. And during that time, my dad and his economic world began to go through a transition. It really didn't hit hard until about 1980, but things began to change. And so by 1980, it was like, you know, a lot of things in our lives economically turned upside down. Like, he had been very successful as a logger, as a small businessman, as a logger for decades. And then around about 1980, his business, his way of living flipped end over end. And again, I'm not going to tell you that this is some horribly sad story. This is kind of just reality. This stuff happens. But the problem is that people get used to a certain kind of expectation. You know, when people look at the world today in terms of challenges, some people will focus on challenges that are very much about the dance with nature, which means the challenge of, for example, the environment, the challenge of disease. These are dances with nature. We can do some of the work. Nature does some of the work, okay? When you're sailing on a sailboat, that's a dance with nature. That's a challenge. That's a dance with nature, okay? But some of the challenges we face are not material challenges. Some of them are spiritual. Some of them are in the mind. Some of them don't involve manipulating reality. And one of the challenges we face, if you want my opinion on this, which I'm going to give you, is this huge tension, this gigantic, gigantic tension, as if two kids are pulling on a rubber band until it snaps, and one of them loses an eye, which actually happened to some friends of mine when they were kids. The basic forces at work here are expectations and reality. And I don't mean the reality that you're fed, like when I was a kid, by the 6 o'clock news, or these days by Facebook or Google, or fucking MSN, or fucking any of these sources of information, sarcastic quotes. I don't mean that reality. I mean the reality that you can see and feel. I mean that, like, that first Christmas after my dad's economic situation began to turn, and it was obvious that that Christmas was going to be a bit spare compared to other Christmases. And as a kid, I grokked it out as best I could. I figured things were probably hard. That's the reality I'm talking about. I'm not talking about what President Trump tells you, or what Obama told you for 8 years, or what Bush told you, or whatever. I'm talking about the actual reality of life. You know, do you have enough money to buy food, to pay for rent? Do you have enough money to take care of an emergency? We have these two trains in America. And it's not just here, it's in China too. In fact, I think it's going to be worse in China. But we have these two trains in America, in China, all around the world. One of the trains has a name on its side. And that name is expectations. And the other train, heading in the direction of the first train, so they're basically on a collision course, is called reality. And reality is what it is. Now, of course, if we would come to our senses, if we would grow up, if there was a way for us to recognize that we are currently on a collision course with history, and if we don't change, we are going to get really, things are going to get really fucked. Yeah, we could change. I don't know that that's going to happen. So if you're one of these people who thinks about things like peak oil or abrupt climate change or geoengineering or 5G, or any number of other things that you're worried about, let me tell you something. All of those things might be important, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the simple economic fact that currently there are people in this country who expect a certain reality, and that reality does not exist. And if they stay on the train of expectations, if they stay on this fucking crazy-ass crazy train, they're gonna die. Their world is going to get destroyed. And yet none of them have the courage to get off the train or to tell the fucking conductor or engineer to stop. You know, when I was in graduate school, and I've mentioned the story before, I read a paper by Professor Davies, Toward a Theory of Revolution. And I've mentioned this paper before because I think you should read it. If you haven't read it, look up Davies, 1962, Toward a Theory of Revolution. A PDF should be available online. And one of the things Davies talks about is, if you really want to understand why societies go kablooey, why societies sort of tear themselves apart, it's really not that complicated, okay? People get used to a certain kind of material wealth. If a society is historically poor and stays poor, you generally have stability. If a society is historically rich and stays rich, you generally have stability. If a society is poor and becomes rich and then starts heading poor again, heading to the direction of poor again, like you become rich and now you're heading to the poorhouse again, that society becomes unstable. And right now, and I think the powers that be in America know this, right now they're trying to manage expectations. That's been the game. It's like the conversation about the new normal. Like, what's the new normal, you know? Well, that whole new normal that we got fed after the great financial crisis 10 years ago, that new normal was bullshit. That was a way for them to try to convince you everything is fine. It's just a new kind of normal. Oh, sure, you might have to work four jobs, and there's a good chance that you'll have a heart attack in a 7-Eleven parking lot between being on your way to job 3 and job 4 because you're not sleeping, and then you start taking the crystal meth or stealing your kid's Ritalin because you need to work. That's the new normal. I don't know, folks. You know, I actually don't know for certain what the future holds. That is for me the giant question mark. The fact that the future is currently incredibly unstable is without question to me. Like, I don't know that anybody, there isn't one person alive today that I think has any real clue what's coming. That's how unstable the future is. Now, if you're a Christian like me, you might have a spiritual view of the present and the future and what's coming. But in terms of knowing the specifics, I don't know the specifics. I really don't. But I do have a sense that this current state of affairs that we're in is not going to last. And I am really surprised it's lasted this long. I mean, you know, when you think about the whole Israeli thing, how is it that we ultimately became a country that would be okay with supporting any nation that wages illegal war, that wages wars of aggression? How did we become that country? Saudi Arabia is quote-unquote one of our number one allies. Saudi Arabia has been waging an illegal war in Yemen for several years. Saudi Arabia has been murdering men, women, and children using weapons we built in Yemen. How did we become that country? How did our reality, or the reality that should have been, get swapped for that fucking bullshit? I actually do think the powers that be have done a good job of convincing people that up is down and down is up and war is peace. They've done a good job. The real question is, how good a job did they do? And one of the indications of how good a job is how crazy things get. Here's what's going to sound counterintuitive, but you need to fucking listen. This is counterintuitive. But the better job that our government, our crocodile, our powers that be do of manipulating and controlling people's perception of reality, the worse it's going to be when that ship breaks down. Oh, wait a minute. Do I need to say that again? The more they try to tell you that 2 plus 2 equals 5, the worse it's going to be when you figure out, no, it equals 4. When that day comes, I promise you, folks, you're not going to see a lot of rational behavior. You'll see a lot of fucking anger. You will see the collective unconscious equivalent of, you know, HAL 9000 or HAL in 2001 A Space Odyssey. You're going to see the collective unconscious equivalent of people being, you know, spaced, sent through the airlock. That will be the outcome of all the lies. That will be the outcome of all the deception. You will see an eruption of the diseased unconscious of America. And folks, that's going to probably be as bad or worse than any nuclear bomb or any abrupt climate change or any of the other myriad of disasters and plagues that could befall us. When the day comes that people break through this because it becomes weakened, all the lying and all the deception will have only achieved one goal, and that is to make people as crazy as possible. And again, I don't know what the plan is here. If the plan is to create a nation of people who go insane, then great. What's the end game of that? I truly don't know. I don't think they're in charge of this. I don't think they want this, but I think they know it's coming. And so for them, it's a question of when it hits. I already think it's starting to hit. And I'd also say this, that doesn't mean that the false flags and the fucking every week mass shooting is real. I don't know if those things are real or not real. But what I will say is, before this massive conniption fit of the collective unconscious occurs in the U.S., they want to get all the guns. But that too is futile. We're not talking about a disease or a plague or something like Ebola. We're talking about something where everyone is already infected. This is already damage that's been done. All the decades of lying and manipulating and gaslighting the American people, all that has a cost. And when that bill gets paid on that particular day, you're going to see the beginnings of ugliness that most Americans can't even fathom. In fact, you would have to have been someone who was a kid in the former Yugoslavia in 1994 or 95 to envision what the fuck I'm talking about. You would have to be an innocent child looking at their parents who had become monsters, who turned on their neighbors, who beheaded their friends. That is going to be sedate compared to what Americans will see here. So I don't know. I got to say, when I ask the question, what is the next move of like the deep state, I just don't think there is a move that involves anything like, I don't know. I think of a culling. I think the only move they have left is a fucking culling. It is a killing off of as many people as they can so they can manage them. And if it happens to also be the case that Guy McPherson is right and the whole earth is about to boil itself, then why not risk a nuclear war? Because then you get the fucking nuclear winter, right? And then a lot less people. And you've given them all kinds of problems to worry about. So if you want to sequester yourself with your 100 bestest billionaire buddies down in Antarctica, you could probably do that because the rest of the world will simply be trying to survive. So, anywho, next topic. So, as a religious person, and as a spiritual person, and as a thinking person, and as someone who recognizes that science, as an area of human thought, has delivered a great deal, at least materially, to the human race, I often do think about scientific questions. And the other day it occurred to me that if you really wanted to get to the nub of it, like if you had to teach somebody what is science in the simplest way possible, yeah, you could go into, you know, René Descartes and Bacon and the history of the scientific method and blah, blah, blah. And you could talk about, you know, publishing your work and, you know, the validation of your peers, peer review. You can talk about hypothesis testing and whatnot. All this is true. All this is true. But to me, the simplest definition of science is the following. Science is the study of consequences. That's it. Science is simply the study of consequences. If I do something, what happens? If I observe something, what happens next? That's what science is. Sure, there are many methodologies or methods of analyzing consequences, and one of the tools of analyzing consequences is mathematics and probability theory and statistics. That's one way you can analyze consequences. But the point is, when you're doing science, you're looking at consequences. You're looking at how things interact as you experience them in nature. That's what science is. Science is the observation of our relationship to the physical world in terms of consequences. And when you think of it in that way, all of a sudden a lot of bullshit disappears. Because it's kind of like when people say, well, you don't have to worry about that. That will take care of itself. But in no way do I think people should accept that. No way should people say, well, you know, we don't fully understand this, but let's go ahead and do it. And I know I'm sounding a bit vague right now, but I'm thinking in terms of the decisions we clever monkeys have made in the past to do a great many things, to do a great many things, like build nuclear weapons, like mass vaccination, which for some people is controversial. It's often put in terms of, well, you know, we can't know everything. And that is true. But science is the study of consequences. That's something I want you to take away from this. I'm kind of like not feeling too good, so I may have to cut this podcast short. I'll let you noodle on the whole science is the study of consequences. I kind of think that's a simple way of explaining it. But anyways, I'm going to let you guys go because I think I got to head to the bathroom. Talk to you later.